A few years ago, I was at a dinner party, and there was a woman there who was going through a very messy divorce, and she was hating her husband. And she said that, expletive deleted, he is so horrible, he has taken everything, he has left me with nothing. I am destitute. The only thing he has left me with is my apartment. I have to sell it to survive. I'm desperate. I'm destitute. And I don't know how I'm going to live. And someone at the table said, how much are you asking for the apartment? And she said, $7,750,000. Now, we laugh because obviously that seems ridiculous to most of us. The poor thing is down to almost $7 million. What's she going to do? But if you think about it, it's actually very sad. This woman can have $7 million and still experience destitution. With an amount of money that most of us would consider a fortune, she experiences destitution. How many of us think that if only we had $7 million, we would feel full or rich or safe or satisfied? How many of us live in the illusion that we could get rid of that nagging sense of not enough if we could only achieve some position in life or some amount of money or some personal or romantic relationship? In hearing and truly paying attention to this story, I think we can come to the conclusion that prosperity is not caused by money or by success or achievement. Even though this woman had more money than most of us could ever dream of, she was definitely not experiencing prosperity. So I began to ask myself, what is prosperity really? What is the source of prosperity? What is the cause of prosperity? How can we truly achieve prosperity? I'm a lover of word derivation, so the first thing I did was go to my word derivation dictionary. And the word prosperity, it comes from prosperare. Pro means for, and sperare in Italian, I assume in Latin, means hope. So prosperity means towards hope. To me, that means living in every moment, knowing that no matter what the circumstances look like, right now, anything is possible. And if anything is possible, that means that the answer is already here. And if the answer is already here, that means that the problem is already solved. And if the problem is already solved, there's nothing to worry about. But how could the problem already be solved? How could the money or the love or the job or the perfect health be already here when they're clearly not here, when I don't have them, when I don't know how to get them, when I don't know if I can get them? When we don't see them, it certainly seems as though money and security and the right partner and success and recognition are all out there, things that we don't have that we have to find, attract, get, have, and hold. But the truth is, it's impossible to find, get, attract, have, or hold anything out there. I'll repeat that. It's impossible to have, find, get, or hold anything that's out there. Why? Because we don't live out there. Nothing out there can ever get to where we live in here, and we can never get out there to have anything out there. We never can, and we never will. Let me show you what I mean. Close your eyes, if you would. With your eyes closed, notice how you know that you're here. Notice how you know that you exist, that you are present. There's a sense of consciousness, a sense of I am. This sense of consciousness doesn't have your name on it. It's not located in any particular place. In fact, it's invisible. It can't be seen. I can't look over at you and see your consciousness. You can't see your consciousness. But it's definitely here as an experience, an invisible, non-physical, non-locatable experience. So it could be said that who you are is an invisible consciousness located nowhere. Take a moment to experience that. Experience your invisible consciousness. Now notice that you have sensations. Itching, tightness, shortness of breath, hotness, coldness, relaxation, calm, pounding, rushing. With your eyes open, you might call these physical sensations. But with your eyes closed, you can't even be sure you have a body. All you know is that within your consciousness, you are experiencing sensations. And the experience of these sensations, like your consciousness, is invisible. I cannot see your experience of hotness or coldness or tension. You cannot see it either. You may see the results of it, but you cannot see the experience itself. Take a few moments and notice the sensations you're experiencing. Notice whether they stay the same or keep changing. Doesn't matter. There's no right or wrong here. There's nothing to get. There's nothing to be with except them. Nothing to change. So it could be said that who you are is an invisible consciousness experiencing invisible sensations. Now, notice your thoughts. Notice that you can think of anything. Locate a baboon in your thoughts and say, got it, when you got it. Got it. Right. It shouldn't take you more than the time it takes to think of it for you to get it. And the time it takes to think of anything is infinitesimal. Now see yourself doing the twist on the rings of Saturn. Say, got it, when you got it. Got it. If you're having trouble seeing this or finding yourself saying, well, that's impossible, Saturn's rings are not solid and you can't breathe on Saturn, remember, I didn't ask you to take this into the physical universe just to see it in the invisible world of unlimited possible thoughts. Notice that the things you see in this realm are invisible, not solid or physical. You have infinite choice of what you can see here, unlike in the physical world where it seems much harder to see things. And this infinite world is inside you and is always available to you. So it could be said that who you are is an invisible consciousness experiencing invisible sensations and containing unlimited invisible thoughts. In fact, what I have just described is your entire world of experience and is the only place in which you live. All you truly are is an invisible consciousness experiencing invisible sensations and containing unlimited invisible thoughts. Period. So knowing this, knowing that you are really invisible and live only in the invisible world, open your eyes and look out at the visible world, which is not where you live. You are just looking at it. So open your eyes. That's different, isn't it? So if we don't live in the visible world, what is our relationship to it? Why is it there? Is it really there? If it is there, is it what it appears to be? Of what use is it to us if we don't live in it? Well, let's explore that a bit. You live only in the invisible world and you cannot ever get into the physical world. Things appear before you, but how do you know they're there? Only by your experience of them. You might say, well, everybody agrees that there is a table there, but you only know that because you see and everybody inside of you. Is everybody really there? No way of knowing. Except you have an experience of everybody, an experience that takes place inside you and only inside you. Frankly, I do not even know if you're all here. I know that I see you. But I'm seeing you as an image on my own retina inside my own head. That does not prove that you're here. All it proves is that I experience you as being here. So you can't ever get into the manifested world just as you could never get into a mirror. You see the reflection in the mirror clear as day, but if you tried to walk into the mirror, you'd hit the glass. And anyway, the reason you can't walk into a mirror is there's nothing in the mirror. Or at least, what you think you see in the mirror is not actually in the mirror. It may look like there's a you standing 5 feet in back of the glass, if you're standing 5 feet in front of it, but there isn't. There's just something that is reflecting you exactly, so you can see what you look like. Any change you would like to make in the mirror can only be made by making a change to yourself. And the result you will see in the mirror is still not real, but only a reflection of the change you made to yourself. You can't spend money you see in the mirror. You can't feel anything in the body that's in the mirror. The image in the mirror can't go anywhere or do anything. Only you can. Think about the mirror for a moment. A mirror. A mirror has no power to do anything that the thing in front of it doesn't do. And conversely, the mirror cannot not do something that the thing in front of it is doing. When's the last time you stood in front of a mirror and it said, forget it, I'm not reflecting that, you look horrible? Can't happen. So, your thoughts occur in the invisible world and are experienced by you invisibly as thoughts and sensations and thoughts about the sensations, which lead to more sensations, all occurring in the invisible world of experience. So, in fact, and I can't stress this too often because it can be difficult to comprehend, the invisible world of experience, of thoughts and sensations, is the only place in which you experience the world. The physical world, which even includes your own body, is a mirror that you are looking at, whose sole purpose is for you to see an exact reflection of your thoughts. For you to see which thoughts, out of the infinite possible thoughts that are always here and available, you are choosing to think. How do we know this? Because if the only place you experience anything is in the invisible world inside, then what you see on the outside can only be experienced by the thoughts and resulting sensations you notice when you see that thing on the outside world. And since the infinite possibilities of thought always exist in the unmanifested, invisible world inside of you, just because you're noticing one thought doesn't mean that all the others aren't there right now. So when you look at the outside world, all it does is allow you to notice the thought you've chosen to hold, and thus experience you've chosen to have among all possible thoughts and experiences that exist right now. So the image you see in the mirror isn't the point. Getting a certain thing to be in the mirror is not the goal. It's a tool. You don't put on a beautiful outfit so that you can see it in the mirror. You put it on to have it on. By the same token, the money or success or romance are not the point. What you see in your life is simply a reflection of your thought, the purpose of which is to see your thoughts so that you can know which ones you're thinking and choose one that will give you the experience you desire in the only place in which you can have experience, inside. So if you look in the mirror and don't like the outfit you have on, it's not the only outfit in the world. You have a closet. You have stores. You have other outfits available. You don't go into the mirror to get them. You go to the closet or to the store. And when you put something different on, it immediately and effortlessly appears in the mirror. And the sole purpose of that appearance in the mirror is for you to see what you have on. So when you look at the outside world, you are seeing a reflection of your thoughts. Now, this is not a new concept to us new thoughters. Anyone who's read The Secret or who attends this church week after week or who has done any serious work in new thought knows that your thoughts are reflected in the physical world. Right? Yeah. But where so many of us go off track is that we now try to use this information to make things happen in the physical world that we want to make happen so that we can have stuff. We forget that the physical world is a mirror and begin to think of it as the real thing, as the goal, as the object of life. If you think that the physical world is real or is what it seems to be, nothing in spirituality makes any sense whatsoever. Someone who is experiencing an illness affirms, "I am totally healthy and well." And I say, "You are not. You have the flu." In the physical world, that's what you see. It is in the invisible world of experience that the wellness exists already, right alongside the illness, which is also there. You can go to the experience of wellness even when you have the flu. I'll tell you, my left side hurts like crazy. I am having an experience of wellness. I have a sensation in my left side. I pulled something. That has nothing to do with my ability to enjoy this, to be well, to be here. It's an experience. You can experience wellness when you have the flu, when you have a pain, when you have something wrong. And as a reflection of that experience, the flu will either disappear or you will experience value in having the flu in terms of spiritual growth or the chance to rest or to think or to find out how much you are loved and supported. The object isn't for the flu to go away, although it most likely will, as a reflection of your thought of health. But once you truly have the thought of health, you don't need to have the flu go away. I would love to have a chiropractor give me a crack and fix this, but whether they do or not, I am in health right now in a place that has nothing to do with my body and in the only place in which I live. Paradoxically, you will know you will have the thought of health when it either goes away or your experience of it is different. So we, this I want to emphasize, we are not causing things to happen because there are no things to cause. You are simply seeing a reflection of your thoughts. And if you remember the woman at the dinner party, you remember that she looked in the mirror and saw over $7 million and saw destitution. Think of the anorexic who looks in the mirror and sees a girl weighing 70 pounds and calls herself fat. Think of the person who has hundreds of friends and an active social life and calls themselves lonely. If you are holding a thought, you will see that thought no matter what mirror you look in. Everything you see in the world will be interpreted as that thought. I'm reminded of my friend Alan's grandmother. Alan's grandmother was what you might call a registered Jewish grandmother. She really had it down. And she was in the hospital with some minor ailment, and she was saying to Alan's mother, her daughter, "I want to die, I want to die, it's so awful, I just want to die, kill me now." Now, Alan's mother had a friend, Vera, and Vera's mother had had a stroke 6 weeks before. But Vera's mother was a different sort, and Vera's mother went out to lunch on her walker with the girls, and Alan's mother and Vera's daughter, and they went to a lovely lunch, and they had a great time. And Alan's mother comes back to her mother, who's in the hospital, "I want to die, I want to die," and says to her, "Mom, why can't you be more like Vera's mother? Look at her. She had a stroke just 6 weeks ago, and she's out and about and having a good time." To which her mother replied, "What are you saying? You want I should have a stroke?" No matter where she looks, she will see her thought. Until she exchanges her thought for another one that's already there, she will see it in every mirror of the world. Whereas Vera's mother, who certainly seems to have a more serious condition, holds a different thought. So she gets to be out and about and have a good time. So prosperity is not in the stuff of the world. It's not out there. So what is prosperity and where is it found? Inside of you, in the invisible world, which Charles Fillmore, one of the co-founders of Unity, calls substance. He calls the invisible world substance. Every thought exists in your imagination, your imagination. You can think any thought and see anything. And that is what you will see before you. No matter what the circumstance, whatever is appearing before you is what you're thinking. So often I hear people say, "That can't be, I'm thinking positive thoughts, so how come I'm not seeing them out there?" And I say, remember the mirror. If you're not seeing it in the mirror, it ain't in front of the mirror. And if you are seeing it in the mirror, it must be in front of the mirror. It reminds me of the mad woman of Shiloh who says, "I never look in that mirror, that old woman is in there." If you think you're thinking positive thoughts and you're not seeing them in the mirror of the world, it can only be because you're plastering that thought over a thought of fear or lack or pain in order to try and overcome the other thought. It's like being a size 12 and putting on a size 2 dress. You're going to see the size 12. So we are seeing our thoughts in the mirror of the world. The world is a reflection of our thoughts. Basically, we all know this. All we have to do is take on a new thought and it will appear. Not only that, but we know that all we have to do is take on a new thought and it's already done on the inside in the only place in which we really live life. Simple. Take on a new thought and it's done. So how come we don't do it? How come time after time we take on a new thought and 5 minutes or an hour or a day after we've exchanged the thought, we're right back at the old thought? We're bright, committed, spiritual, not lazy people. We're not stupid. It can't be that we're just missing the point. There must be a darn good reason why we keep being unable to hold the thoughts we wish to hold and thus do not see them reflected in the mirror of the world. Through years of research in the methodology that I call the Thought Exchange, and we're going to do a workshop this afternoon at 1 p.m., and many of you have participated in Thought Exchange workshop that I gave here a few years ago and in ones I've given elsewhere, I've come to understand that the reason we run from these thoughts is because they come with sensations. Every thought generates a sensation. I'll show you what I mean. Would everybody in this church take on the thought, I am hands down the most gorgeous person in this room. Notice the giggling. The first thing most of you will probably notice is that you have another thought directly after that thought. Many will jump to the thought, yeah, right, or that's ridiculous, or fat chance. Few of you will have the thought, why, yes, I am. But if you look at what preceded the thought you jumped to, you will find that you had a physical sensation that told you to jump to that thought, a tightness in your chest, a bump in your heart, a creepy feeling in your body, something physical that was generated by the thought, I am the most gorgeous person in the room. And that sensation may or may not have been one you expected. Most people would call, I am the most gorgeous person in the room, a positive thought, and yet for many, it did not generate a positive sensation. By the way, I never use the words positive and negative thought. I think there's no such thing. Every thought just produces the result that you see before you. There's no one person's positive can be another person's negative. So back to the thought, I am the most beautiful person in the room, and the sensation it generated. If the physical sensation is one you think you can't tolerate because of an earlier incident or trauma in your life, you will jump to what I call a protective thought. And I can't, it'll never happen, that's not true thought, to protect you from the thought that caused the sensation. Why would we do that? Well, let's say when you were a child, you said, I'm the most beautiful person in the room, or something related to it, like, I'm wonderful, I'm terrific. And someone slapped you across the face and said, how dare you think that way? Who do you think you are? You're so full of yourself. Go to your room. Someone punished you for that. Or to go even further, let's say some relative told you how pretty or beautiful you were and then proceeded to molest you. Every time as an adult you say, I'm the best looking, you're going to feel that sensation you felt as a child when you were reprimanded or attacked, and may think you're in danger and run to the protective thought, I can't do this, to get away from the thought that produced the sensation you're afraid of, even though that sensation is now harmless and doesn't mean anything because you are an adult with different tools and different ability to protect yourself and feel things. So in order to hold a thought, we must be able to experience the sensations that go with it. This understanding lies at the core of our being able to experience true prosperity, because prosperity is not something we're reaching for. It's not something we're striving for or moving toward. Prosperity is an awareness that everything is possible in the invisible world of our thoughts, which, remember, is the only place we live. And the experience of prosperity is the ability to think any thought we like. And the ability to think any thought we like is totally dependent on our ability to be with the sensations that that thought generates. Once we can do that, we have it all. We can choose any thought, know that we already have what we're thinking on the inside, and the side effect of that must be that when we look in the mirror of the world, we will see our thoughts reflected there. So how do we become able to do this? Sensations can be very frightening or painful, and it's difficult not to assign meaning to them based on the past. It's difficult not to run away from them. What is it that allows us to choose a thought, stay with the sensations it brings up, know that what we want, we already have, see it reflected in the mirror of the world? If we think that we are in any way affected or endangered by these thoughts or sensations, it becomes almost impossible to stay with them. Fortunately, we are not, in truth, even connected to them or affected by them in any way. Let me prove this to you. If you would close your eyes once again. Notice your sensations. Notice what you're feeling in your body. Any tightness, itching, hotness, coldness, emptiness, fullness, pressure. Just notice it and take a moment to be with whatever is there without judging or interpreting it. Now, notice your thoughts. They may be thoughts about your sensations. They may be thoughts about how you can't wait to get out of here and go to brunch. They may be thoughts about something that happened 20 years ago or that's going to happen 12 years from now. Just notice whatever thoughts you're having. Now go back to noticing your sensations. Now go back to noticing your thoughts. Now, notice who's noticing all this? Can you see that who is noticing is neither your thoughts nor sensations? In the back of all this is a neutral noticer who simply looks at all this and sees it. The noticer has no opinion and is unaffected by thoughts and sensations. If you notice an opinion about the thoughts and sensations you're having, that's not the noticer's opinion. It's an opinion that the noticer is noticing. The noticer itself is neutral. It sees everything. It sees what you want. It sees that there are infinite possible thoughts, infinite possible sensations, and infinite possible outcomes, which are no more than reflections of the infinite possible thoughts that we can have. It is affected by none of it. It is in no danger. It is, in fact, simple omnipotence itself, awareness, connection to everything. It is, in fact, who you really are. You are not the things that happen to you. You are not your body. You are not even your invisible thoughts or your sensations. You are the invisible, protected, safe, unassailable noticer who is noticing all that. You are not located anywhere, and you have no physicality. When you ask a Buddhist, "Who are you?" they will say, "I am nothing, nowhere." So you are no thing, and you don't exist in a location. That could at first freak one out. What do you mean, "I'm nothing, I don't exist, I'm isolated, stuck in here by myself, the world doesn't affect me, nothing matters"? But if you look at it, you will realize that everyone actually exists in this place. So you are in here with everybody. Your noticer is not really your noticer, it is the noticer. Everyone is being noticed by the same noticer. My noticer doesn't have my name on it, it just notices this construction called David. I am truly this noticer, but so is everyone else. There actually isn't an everyone else. As I said before, I don't even know if you're here. All I know is that I experience you in my thoughts and sensations, and the noticer notices that I experience you. So all of humanity and all of the animal kingdom and all the occurrences in the world are all simply reflections of thoughts and sensations that are being noticed by the noticer. And who is the noticer? The noticer is who I really am. But think further about the qualities of the noticer. Sees everything, knows that we already have everything, does not judge or condemn, cannot be hurt in any way by what we see in the physical world, is always present and available to us. Sounds a lot like God to me. So we are the noticer. Everyone is the noticer. God is the noticer. We are God. It is all contained in the invisible place with no location that is within us in the invisible world. So knowing that you are the noticer and knowing that the noticer is the same as God, open your eyes. Hello, God. Would you turn to your neighbor and say, "Hello, God"? That's who you are. That's who you're looking at. When we read that man is made in God's image, I think this is what it means. So often people think, if God is here, why doesn't he or she or it, however you see him, show him or herself to us? Like a bolt of lightning, I realized one day that God can't show itself to us because there's nothing to show. God is not physical. God is invisible. God is invisible consciousness. God is the invisible noticer. So you can't see God because God, like your consciousness and your thoughts, cannot be seen, cannot speak, cannot do anything. But God, like your noticer, your consciousness, your thoughts and sensations, can totally and at any and every time be experienced. In fact, we're always experiencing God. And being made in God's image doesn't mean that we physically look like God, because God isn't physical. But inside, as noticers, we look exactly like God. Image is the root of the word imagination, and that is exactly where God is, in our imagination. So we now know that we are no one, nowhere. We are unhurtable. We can experience any thought and any sensation and just notice it rather than being endangered by it. So what's the point of life? No struggle, no strife, nothing missing, nothing to get, no crises, just an endless and infinite choice of sensations and thoughts experienced by our invisible noticer, which is God itself. sounds really boring. But it isn't. Because the point of life is to know that we have everything. Just like the point of a bank account is to know we have money in reserve whenever we need it. Or the point of a career is to get to the point where we are provided for and know we have all we need. The point of life is to know we have everything. And every time we're in that state, we are happy and content and excited and peaceful. And we can then look at everything and decide which part of everything we want to play with today, knowing that we're in no danger, that nothing is a matter of life and death, even life and death itself, because we're non-physical to begin with. So we see we can enjoy ourselves and use everything that happens to remind ourselves that we have everything. It would be like having $1 billion in the bank or an unlimited wardrobe. We wouldn't sit in the bank with all our money or carry it all around with us. We wouldn't wear all our clothes at the same time. We just know that the money and the clothes are there. And that's what would give us the sense of comfort and safety and peace. And every day, or whenever we felt like it, we would use the money for something we wanted to play with or put on an outfit because we want to see what we look like in it. But the real source of our sense of safety and security is that we know we have the $1 billion or the closet full of clothes. And when we think we don't have enough money or enough clothes, even when we have tons of stuff or are wearing a beautiful outfit or are down to our last $7 million, we're worried. So what is it like to know that you not only have billions of dollars in unlimited clothes in the invisible world, but everything else? And whether or not you buy anything or put anything on, you still have them. This is actually the truth. And you have a mirror called the world that will reflect this when you know you have everything and will remind you when you forget by reflecting what it is you're thinking. Not to hurt you, but so that you can see it. And go back to the place where you have everything, inside. Think about it for a minute. When you learn to use the world in this way, as a mirror in which nothing real, nothing dangerous is going on, but which is giving you the opportunity to see any limiting thought you might be choosing to have, every crisis becomes an opportunity to have wholeness and peace. Every crisis is nothing more than a reflection of a thought of limitation or lack or fear that you're having. You're not causing the crisis any more than you're causing your reflection in a mirror. The crisis is just automatically appearing as a reflection of your thought. And all you have to do is exchange your thought for a thought that will reflect as something else, and you're home. But, and if you get one thing from this talk, get this. You will not be able to exchange your thought and hold the new thought unless you are able to be with the sensations that that new thought produces. And the only way you can be with that sensation, if that sensation is associated with fear from your earlier life, is to be able to know that who you are is the invisible noticer, and stand in the place of the noticer and simply notice your thoughts and sensations, remembering that they are not you and have no power to hurt you. When you can do this, you will not only begin to really experience your life, but you will have complete mastery over it. You will be able to choose any thought because you will be able to stay with any sensation it produces and will be able to see anything in the world. Now, one caveat that anything may not look like you thought it would, just as your reflection in the mirror does not always look like what you think it should. When you have the thought of prosperity, $7 million may or may not show up. But whatever does show up will be experienced as prosperity. And whatever you truly regard as prosperity must show up. Now, it's one thing to understand these principles intellectually and another to actually experience them. This afternoon, we're going to do a thought exchange workshop to give you a firsthand experience of how this can work for you on the specific issues that you're facing. In this workshop, we sit in a circle, and whoever wants to speak, nobody has to speak, you get as much out of it whether you speak or not, brings up some problem or issue they're seeing in the physical world. And since we want to see what you're really seeing, and thus what you're really thinking, you do not have to describe it in positive PC unity terms. We do not need, "I know that all is in divine order." What we want to hear is, "I hate her and I wish she would die." Okay? And when you have described what you're seeing in the mirror of the world, We will identify the thought that you're having that is reflecting as this problem and add, what thought might you exchange it for that would provide something you really want to see in the world? And have you exchanged your old thought for the new thought? The old thought doesn't have to be gotten rid of. It's still there. You just won't be picking it up. It's like if I'm in the kitchen and I'm baking a cake, I don't pick up the pepper. But I don't have to go, cancel, get the pepper out of the kitchen. I can't even see it's there. I just don't pick it up. And in fact, I might use it for something else someday. So once you've picked up your new thought, we'll ask the crucial question that makes this work quite different from a lot of other work that I know I've done. What sensations are you experiencing when you take on the new thought? And virtually every time, you will find, perhaps to your surprise, that you're feeling tightness or choking or a stomach ache or some unpleasant, uncomfortable, scary sensation when you take on the thought that you thought you wanted to take on. And if you can be with a sensation that comes with a new thought you're holding, you will see that thought appear reflected in the world. And it will be safe to have that thought and safe to have the sensation that goes with it. And the new appearance in the world will not be important because something different is appearing in the world, but because the whole experience, the very crisis you were upset about, has turned out to be the very vehicle that brought you back to a sense of wholeness, a sense of safety, and the knowing that you can have everything, that you have everything, and it cannot be taken away. I've also written a book on the subject, as Nancy said. It's called The Thought Exchange, Overcoming Our Resistance to Living a Sensational Life. After years of writing and rewriting it, as I learned more about the subject, it's finally been published, and it's actually gone into its fourth printing in 5 months. It's really been amazing how it's proliferated. It contains all the principles I've talked about today, plus practical ways to apply them to the arts, to performing, to corporate coaching, to health issues, and to our love lives, and anything you want to apply it to. If you read the one that I had with me a few years ago, which was sort of the paper-bound one, this one is much more complete and includes a lot of discoveries. The sensation stuff is the stuff that I've really just come to understand in the last couple of years, which is why it didn't get published until the last couple of years. I mean, things have a way of working out. I'm going to do a book signing in the lobby after the service. I also have songbook CDs, and I even, if you're in love with the sound of my voice, I have audiobooks that can be ordered. I don't know why you would do that. So come out, pick up a book, a CD, a music book, whatever you want, or just say hello. And if you possibly can, stay for the workshop and find out how you can apply these principles right here, right now, to knowing that your life is totally sensational. So let's spend the rest of the day, and in fact, the rest of our infinite lives, celebrating in the invisible, safe and sound, unlimited, prosperous world in which you actually live. So would you repeat after me? Life is sensational.
Life is sensational.
Once again, life is sensational. Life is sensational. Good. Thank you very much.